Hello and welcome to Geopol Talks. My name is Franklin Kebueta and I'm honored to welcome you to this podcast from the world's leader in mobile data collection, conducting surveys via mobile modes in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Over time, Geopol has perfected the processes and technologies we use to gather reliable data via mobile, and recently we sought to share some of this expertise through a webinar that answered some fundamental questions on mobile research. That's a perfect way to start our podcast, right? So without further ado, I'll play you the recording of the webinar run by an experienced panel of Christine Mweni, who is the Business Development Lead East Africa, Scott Lancel, the Vice President for International Development and Relief, and King Beach, our Director of Solutions. The webinar was moderated by Roxana Elliott, with our VP Marketing. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. We're going to go ahead and get started. This is a webinar. We're going to be answering some frequently asked questions around mobile research and mobile research modes. We are Geopol, so I'll introduce all the speakers in just a minute. Just for some housekeeping items, this is an interactive webinar. We want to answer all of your questions, so you can ask questions either in the chat or using the Q&A, and we will get to them at the end. We're just going to have a pretty quick presentation to start with that'll go through some of the first questions that we often get, and then we will open it up to all of your questions after that. So with that, let's get started. I'm gonna introduce my colleagues who are speaking. I'm Roxana Elliott. I am on the Geopol marketing team. And we have with us Christine. She is a business development lead for East Africa based in Nairobi. Scott, our VP of International Development. And King, who is our Director of Solutions. And so today, just for a brief agenda, we'll just give you a very quick intro to who Geopol is and what we do. And then we'll jump into the different mobile-based research modes that there are that we use at Geopol and that some of you may have used to collect data before. We will do a spotlight on CADI, which is computer-assisted telephone interviewing, which is a mode that more and more people are moving to, especially with a lot of pauses in in-person data collection right now due to COVID-19. And then we will go into our discussion and answer some frequently asked questions and answer all of your questions as well. So I am going to turn it over to Christine to go through just an intro to Geopol and what we do.
Thank you, Roxana. Hello, everyone, and welcome once more to today's session. So I'll just quickly walk you through the Geopol overview, basically who we are and what we do. So Geopol is a mobile research firm that was established in 2012. And one of the USPs that we have as Geopol is basically our ability to undertake surveys utilizing different survey modes. So we are able to undertake surveys not only through face-to-face, that is CAPI interviews, but we also have a USP of undertaking surveys remotely via mobile. And some of those modes include SMS, which is basically the short messaging service. We do also undertake surveys through telephone interviews, which are basically the CATI live calls. We do have our own mobile application available on Android and iOS. Mobile web as well is one of our platforms, which is similarly to what we commonly know as online. And those modes that I've mentioned basically are quantitative modes. However, qualitatively, we are also able to undertake surveys remotely through what we call MROCs, which is the Mobile Research Online Communities. And this is where we undertake surveys through mobile and via WhatsApp group. Lastly, We also have done quite a number of surveys, and we are able to also do surveys through face-to-face, which is basically the CAPI face-to-face interviews. So basically the question is, how are we able to undertake surveys remotely via mobile? So in most of our markets of operation, we do have quite huge databases of respondents. And till now, so basically, how are we then able to undertake surveys remotely via mobile? Geopol has databases in most of our markets of operation, and actually up to date, and the number is still growing, we have around 250 million total mobile subscribers across most of the markets that we operate in. And of this, we have about 5 million who are actually profiled respondents. So not only do we have actually databases of consumers within our databases of consumers, but we also have experts within the team having done years of surveys via mobile. So we have a lot of experience within that area. And per year, we actually do over 10 million interviews per year utilizing mobile as a platform. Next slide, please. What are the advantages of our methodologies? So one of the key things is that we're multimodal, and what this means is basically we are able to undertake a survey utilizing different modes. So Geopol is quite innovative in the sense that we keep a pulse on our clients' needs, and we also keep a pulse on the trends, what is happening in the market. And out of that, we therefore develop modes that basically keep up with the times. If we look at a couple of years back, we used to really rely only on CAPI face-to-face as a mode. So whether a client wanted to undertake one question, whether a client wanted to maybe run a survey in a day or in hours, would basically resort to CAPI face-to-face interviews. However, with time, you can actually see that from the modes that I've mentioned, from those modes, we are actually able to tailor-make them to be able to suit not only the needs of our clients, but also be able to target the right respondent with the right modes. Beyond that is, as mentioned, we are also, our modes are also remote, apart from the CAPI face-to-face interview. The advantage is that it's very efficient, and that's in terms of course, it saves you money, and it also saves you time. So there are surveys we actually close, not even in a day, but even in an hour. So the advantage of these modes is that the remote data collection modes, it allows you to be real-time. We no longer have to wait for 3 months, 6 months for someone to be able to get results during a very critical time. So in terms of turnaround time and in terms of money, it's quite efficient. Beyond that, we are able to actually even undertake surveys in areas where there's really poor infrastructure, where we're not able to send our enumerators to such areas. It's also been very helpful in areas where there is insecurity and we're not able to send our enumerators as well, and been very quite helpful during this period of COVID where information was really critical and yet we could not send enumerators out. So it has the ability to really reach out to our target respondents even without us sending enumerators to the field. Another USP is that our modes are quite representative. So we are not just talking about reaching a niche element of the target population, but we are actually able to cut across reaching consumers, not only within the lower LSM, but higher LSM and mid LSM. We're able to reach respondents, even those with a basic mobile phone. So we are not just talking about reaching respondents who have an internet-enabled phone, but basically, anyone who has a basic enabled phone is able to be reached. So our surveys are quite representative. Lastly, our modes are also quite targeted. So we move from the general and we're able to get into the really specific details in the sense that a client can come in and say, you know, I'm interested in talking to maybe just the adult population in Kenya. And another one will come in and say, you know what, I want to go beyond that, not just looking at the adult population, but I'm also interested in, yes, this is an adult, but again, go deeper. I'm interested in looking at a female. Beyond that, I'm interested in speaking to females aged 18 to 34 year olds, maybe who have children below the ages of 10. So we are able to, through our modes, move from the general into the specifics. Next slide, Roxy. And thank you. Who else, who do we work with basically? So our clients really cut across, and we serve clients, and we've had long-standing relationship with clients within the commercial space, done quite a number of years work supporting clients. For example, P&G, Coca-Cola, Diageo, just to name a few. These are just a few of the clients we picked out, but the list is definitely much longer than this. We also have a lot of experience within the international development space. And as highlighted on the screen, those are some of the clients that we have partnered with across the years. And we have a lot of experience in quite a number of sectors, looking at health and education, health, looking at education, looking at youth sectors, looking at gender, looking at food security. So over the years, we've built a lot of experience as well within the international development space. Lastly, we also support our partners within the research space, and we've highlighted some of our partners within research whom we support in utilizing our platform, in utilizing our database, also for them to be able to also meet the needs of their end clients.
Great, thank you, Christine. And now we're gonna hand it over to Scott to go through more specifically the mobile modes that we use and that you can use to collect data remotely.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for joining our webinar. And we hope that the interactive nature of this will give you a chance to not only put your questions down in chat, but also ask questions at the end, where we will do our best to respond to your needs. So when we talk about using mobile, there are various approaches using mobile telephony to engage populations. We got started back in 2012, really focusing on using SMS, or short message service. These are essentially two-way SMS surveys. Very useful for short, concise, quantitative data collection. Using SMS, you're dealing with 160 character limitations, so it's not ideally suited for long questions, open-ended answers of the sort, but it's very good for very concise, maybe maximum 15 to 20 question surveys that we can then send out to populations, and they can be reached by any mobile phone on the market. So no smartphone necessary, no internet connectivity required. Also, no credit needs to be on that SIM card of the phone. So again, it's quite open to a very broad socioeconomic strata of individuals. And because of the relationships that we've built with mobile network operators across the world, with a very heavy emphasis on our work in and across the African continent, we can undertake these surveys at no cost to the respondents and offer a small incentive top-up at the end of their completing that survey. And as we can talk about later, there's various ways that we can target populations, screening in or screening out particular demographic groups in order to reach them. The great thing about SMS is it can be very inexpensive. It can be done very frequently and very quickly to get an idea of a snapshot of a particular population's perceptions around a particular issue. And as you can see on the left side of the screen, it really is a series of one back and forth, one-way messages, question, answer, over the course of the survey. And this can be done in multiple languages. And next slide, please. So mobile web is essentially a platform that we can undertake. And this is a GeoPoll platform. You can see what it looks like on a screen that is really designed for using a smart device or a feature phone, so a basic phone with a browser. And mobile web is also very fast and very efficient in getting to populations. But again, it is limited to populations that have that mobile web connectivity. So while we do undertake a number of surveys using this mode, when we're really trying to talk to populations in the broadest socioeconomic platform, we will use other modes other than mobile web. But as the world becomes more and more connected with more and more internet connectivity, mobile web continues to be a very valuable resource in order to reach populations, especially those in the higher socioeconomic, more urban settings as well. So those do apply. And also video and audio can be brought into play because of the additional dynamics of the mobile platform. And essentially this is sent out as a one-way message and a link, and the person would click on it to receive the survey. Please, next. So computer-assisted telephone interviewing, or CATI, is one of the things that my colleague King will talk about shortly, but it is using the GeoPoll application, the CATI application. You can see it in the screen of the individual who's conducting the survey, that walks a survey enumerator through a series of questions over the phone. So this is a voice conversation with respondents that can be done at scale, can be built, can be designed around your specific needs. And it's also very, very helpful when you have more complicated questions or matrix questions or questions that don't fit neatly into an SMS type format. The other advantage of CATI or live calls is that if you have challenges around literacy, of course, that this overcomes because it is voice. And the other advantage that brings to bear is that it will have usually a higher response rate because people are very accustomed to picking up the phone and answering. Again, all the same incentives and cost factors are in place as far as the respondent's concerned. We can offer the top-up at the completion of the survey. And again, it costs the person nothing to take that survey. Computer-assisted telephonic interview takes a little bit longer to implement than the other modes, but that's because we are training enumerators to conduct these surveys in language in the particular countries through the call center modalities. Interactive voice response, or as many of you may know as robocalling, is also another platform that we can use in unique cases where SMS or live calls is not appropriate, or if there's a special element to the survey that requires maybe including an audio track of something like to that effect. Robocalls can be popular in some countries and less so in others. We found actually a greater response rate using CATI or live calls whenever possible, but we do bring in interactive voice response as an option. Next slide, please. So this chart really is a very quick snapshot of some of the advantages, disadvantages, and differences between the various modes. And this is a relatively broad stroke approach to laying out some of them, but maybe let me start with the face-to-face and go quickly through these, and feel free to take a screenshot if you can to take a look at that. And I know this recording will be made available later. But face-to-face surveys or computer-assisted in-person interviewing has a great advantage as far as you've got face-to-face interaction with the individual. You can have very long, complicated surveys. And there's, of course, you have those visual aid capacities. If you need to show somebody a photo or need to have them hear an audio track, and you're obviously at the door in the home of the respondent. It is less cost effective. It takes a lot more time to implement. And of course, when trying to work in areas that are more problematic, challenging, or insecure, it's more challenging. Live calls, CATI and IVR, of course, bring into play that audio feature. Also good for the CATI or live calls. You can have a relatively long survey, 20 or 25 minutes. You can collect quantitative data as well as qualitative data. And there are audio features assigned to it as well. Skipping over to SMS, very fast, does not require deploying enumerators. It is ideally suited for short quantitative surveys. But it is limited in the sense that you're not dealing with video or audio interplay, but it's an incredible tool for what we call high frequency engagement with a client, with a particular demographic, and reaching out to a population weekly, monthly, or quarterly if you're looking to track behavior change or project intervention impact. And a mobile app, again, similar, but again, limited to those that have that internet connectivity. And as Christine said at the beginning of the call, we also undertake mobile focus groups using WhatsApp platform. It's not a survey per se, but it is an opportunity to engage in a focus group environment in an online setting. Next, please.
All right, so we're gonna move over. Just move over to King to walk us through CATI in a bit more detail. So King, go ahead.
Hey everybody, and thank you for the handoff, Roxy. So as Scott mentioned, I think, you know, we are seeing a heavy emphasis, I think, on our side right now in the company to really focus on how we can kind of make some of the more CAPI focused work based on some of the circumstances in some of the countries that we work in to work in other modes, primarily CADI. Considering that we do have quite a few mode similarities between both face-to-face and CAPI, as well as CADI. So we're going to speak a little bit to how that composition and transition takes place and how those features and capabilities work between CAPI and CADI interviews. So between those two modes specifically, we do see some general similarities, including our ability to essentially cross-train, develop, and build professional CADI or face-to-face interviewers to conduct work with us. CADI also allows us to, just like we do in face-to-face, really emphasize the probing of responses, quality feedback, being able to accommodate more nuanced or complex questionnaires, as well as focus on response reinforcement. A lot of the different components that we would want to see in typical face-to-face interviews, we can also replicate in CADI to make sure that we adhere to the same standards and processes for implementing the work. We can also, as Scott mentioned, accommodate longer questionnaires through the through CADI compared to, for example, if we were to consider a transition from a face-to-face questionnaire to an SMS survey or a mode that might be more challenging. So in CADI work, we've also found that our ability to accommodate some of the more complex or lengthier questionnaires that might have originated within the design framework of a face-to-face survey, we can make pretty consistently more conducive to the CADI approach or phone interviews as well. And then some considerations as well, there's quite a few that come to mind, but when we do work within the framing of CADI work at Geopol, we are, of course, working within mobile phone owning populations. So, of course, our universe of sample is changing compared to face-to-face, where phone ownership might not be a limitation for participating in our work. We also have to keep in mind that we have robust systems where we need to monitor staff remotely in CADI work, unlike in face-to-face work, where Geopol might typically do face-to-face supervision in the field with field managers. We also have to accommodate remote supervision through data, stand-up calls, as well as our local colleagues at market who help us implement our CADI projects. And we also have the different socioeconomic and cultural nuances that can really change our implementation strategies by individual countries, whether that's reaching vulnerable populations or a hard to reach population, or if it's a gender component on which gender needs to interview which gender in a country. These are some of the different things that we need to think about and work through by country to really accommodate CADI solutions for every use case that we have. Roxy, if you wouldn't mind, next slide. And then generally speaking, transitioning a face-to-face questionnaire into some of our other modes that we are able to accommodate in scale, and for the reasons that Scott mentioned as well. We do go through the typical process of really assessing project needs for work through understanding target populations, sample sizes, the goals of the project, the length of questionnaires, as well as the budget allowed for the project. We work very closely with Scott and our larger Geopol team to help adapt questionnaires between face-to-face to CADI methodologies. That is a very large point of emphasis with our research team and with our questionnaire design team to make sure that we are not losing much during that transition, whether that's the structure, the questions that we ask, or the skip logic, or the probing that might be associated with the typical face-to-face survey. And then lastly, after we adapt that we launch the project and we analyze the data and of course present back the results. The next slide, Roxy. Thank you. So this is that same process in a bit more detail here as well too. This is what a typical life cycle might look like for a standardized project with us. This is applicable to not only CADI, but quite a few different modes in the company, but this is how we typically might implement work in the context of working between a CAPI project or a CADI project. So we do start with project kickoff. This is typically a design session that of course takes place internal with our team, with all of our different constituents and departments during that kickoff. We also have customized project trainings that we really design and implement per country and per project. This can involve decisions as to whether we do in-person or remote trainings, whether our end clients are or are not involved in the training, who leads the training materials and who might be the content experts that could also help us during this customized project training. Right now, within the way that we do CADI work, a lot of these customized project trainings are also conducted remotely with our teams. So a lot of these have evolved into collaborative Zoom meetings and sessions with some of our colleagues in country and our representatives, of course, joining those calls to lead those trainings. After that training phase, we get into the adjustments and through the training feedback to questionnaire, workflow, or sample framework to a project. Once those changes are implemented, we shift to data collection. Within that first week of data collection, there's a heavy point of emphasis that we review the results, analyze the results, and take any proactive work needed to evaluate the project, make staffing decisions, review quality control measures, and change staff sizes or pace or goals of the work to make sure that we hit deadlines. That continues in the second and third week of work that we do as well too, as we continue to evaluate the progress and make staffing decisions as we need. And then, of course, depending on how long the work might take, we have the completion of data collection, the review and analysis of data, as well as the deliverables of data to our colleagues.
Great, thank you. So now we're just gonna go into some frequently asked questions, and I've seen some of the questions that you all have are somewhat similar to this, but let's start with this first one that we get a lot. So do all of these modes require smartphones, and do they require phone access? So Christine, could you take this one?
Hi, Roxy. Okay, so I think Scott had actually touched on the first question, whether all the modes require smartphones. So no, not all the modes require smartphones. For example, SMS requires this one to have a basic mobile phone and you're able to administer the interview. Similarly to CATI live calls as well, we can use even a basic phone for us to be able to administer the interview. So for the modes that really require one to have a smartphone, those modes include the mobile web, which is the online surveys. We also have the mobile app that requires one to also have a smartphone. And also for the qualitative bit, that is the MROCS project that we spoke about, mobile research online communities. So not all modes require smartphones, and that's why we said we're able to segment and choose the right mode for the right respondent and the nature of the survey as well.
Okay, great. And then in terms of GeoPoll's sources of sample and response rates, Scott, can you talk a bit about what different sources of sample we use? I saw one question about where we got that 250 million respondent database as well, and then what those response rates look like.
Sure, thank you very much. So yeah, as I shared in the chat to one of the questions, the databases that we have access to, the more than 250 million, are based on the relationships that we have with mobile network operators around the world. And in those relationships, part of it involves their sharing their subscriber databases of numbers. So these are live numbers that are subscribers with those particular network operators, those carriers like Airtel and MTN, Orange, Vodacom, and many others. And so we have access to those numbers through those relationships. A second sampling approach, which essentially means another source of numbers, is using random digit dialing approaches. We do a lot of that work in the Sahel region of Africa, doing food security data collection, where we're undertaking live calls. And using RDD, random digit dialing, we're able to reach across populations and literally calling numbers that fit within that country code number until we reach the populations that we are intending to engage. And the third sampling approach, which a number of clients engage us on, is utilizing beneficiary lists. So these are lists of numbers that have been collected by our NGO partner or by the client over the course of their project. And as my colleague King touched on, there may have been a face-to-face interaction or a training event of some sort. Mobile numbers were collected. We can then take those numbers and reach out into that finite population and undertake various types of survey data collection. And to the second point on response rates, and my colleagues obviously can chime in as well, it does vary country to country. It varies on the kinds of surveys that are being conducted, and whether it's a sensitive topic or it's not so sensitive. It also depends on the particular demographic. If you're looking to communicate with younger people in a more urban setting, you may have a higher response rate versus an older population in a more rural setting may be more difficult. But we undertake a number of different steps to assist with participation and response rates. Obviously, the incentive is a help in that exercise. And we also are very clear with our respondents that this information is anonymous, their opinion matters, and often the client asks us to explain a little bit about why this survey is being conducted. And we try to be as transparent as we can to make sure that people know that their data is being protected, but their opinion matters and that they'll participate. Different modes have different response rates. Live calls are going to have your highest response rate, as I shared earlier, because people are used to talking to people over the telephone. SMS may have a lower response rate, but we can send out many more attempts in order to get to a particular sample size or a number of completions that you may be interested in.
Great, thank you. And then let's jump a bit into questions around our call centers, which King could answer since he oversees our call center operations. So first of all, one question that we get is, how are we accommodating COVID with our call centers, which traditionally call centers are a central location that all interviewers, conduct interviews out of? And then how do you maintain quality across multiple call centers, and particularly if they're remote?
Happy to answer that question, Roxy. That is a good one. I think that with regards to both of those, I think that what we've seen, of course, as a group is, as we've seen a lot of work transition over to more caddy modes to accommodate face-to-face research that might not be implementable in countries, we have had to design a remote training strategy that allows us to adhere to the same standards that we might expect with data quality as if we were to have fully established call centers with our teams conducting research as we might typically have for our work. What we have taken is a pretty poignant approach on designing replicable training strategies that are reliant on both our software, remote data oversight, and collaborative training sessions to allow some of our team members to work either from call centers at a socially distanced, taking a socially distanced approach in some countries, or working from home in quite a few of our other countries. As of right now, I would say that the majority of our teams globally are working within those two. The majority of our teams are still working remotely, but we also have teams that work socially distanced from our call centers going back to work, or using the call centers to provide some of their supervision or oversight for work as they might typically when the call centers are fully established. So with regards to maintaining quality control and standards, considering we are not implementing work from a traditional call space, we are replicating our training sessions to be much more in-depth remotely. We are mandating a lot of the technical components that individual interviewers need to be able to support from home to be able to meet our standards and conduct work. For example, quality phone connection, being able to work with teams, being able to upload data to our systems. All these things are being accommodated by individual staff members. And we also work with our local teams to build remote supervision strategies as well too. Whether that is holding virtual training sessions or whether that is having teams come to the office to do reviews or having supervisors go to different regions or hubs to discuss or check in with our interviewers. With regards to mandating and accommodating, you know, the COVID rules, of course, you know, we do adhere to WHO guidelines. We also adhere in every country that we work in, the individual laws and policies that are within those countries. So it really is on a per case basis. We still are taking a heavy emphasis towards CADI right now to accommodate these cases as some of the work in our local countries does transition to face-to-face a bit more. But we are really maintaining the same WHO standards with remote supervision, social distancing, masks, transportation, and the like for our local staff that are making the calls in market as well.
Great. And let's move into some open questions. So I see some around some similar topics. So the first one, Christine, if you could speak to this one, is around reach and representativeness of phone surveys, particularly looking at geography targeting. So can we reach, for example, rural areas or counties in Kenya or other countries? So can you run a national survey reaching specific counties? And how do we do location targeting? And a related question is if we can do location targeting within defined geofences or shape files. So that might be a little bit different from the sort of district location targeting. So yeah, those two questions, Christine, if you could take those.
Okay, hi, Roxana. I'll take the first one, and I think Scott can support on the second one. So in terms of whether we're able to do both urban and rural, yes. So I'll give an example of Kenya. So in Kenya, we have over 8.5 million respondents within our database, and that is actually national, which includes both urban and rural respondents. So, and yes, we have done quite a number of surveys where we've reached not only respondents in urban, but rural as well. So yes, through, and we can utilize the different modes for that. The best modes, actually, we're looking at rural. This is where we actually utilize the SMS mode, which is quite effective for reaching that particular segment of the population, and also cutting live calls as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, and Scott, do you want to give some more information and maybe answer about the district targeting and also the defined geofences and if we're able to do that?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So first of all, location definition using live calls when we're using SMS and using CATI is basically respondent-generated answers. So one of the key questions we ask on every survey is where do you live? And the question is built around asking them about the administrative one or ADM one location level. This is one level below national. So it may be a district, it may be a state, it may be another definition. Every country is different. If you use the United States as an example, it would be a state. Now, when looking to target into populations at lower administrative levels, administrative two, three, four, and such, so we're talking county or municipal, township level, it becomes more and more challenging when you're using live calls and SMS because, again, you are now asking people to identify where they are. You are trusting their location. When you're using live calls or SMS, we're not talking to people that are on smart devices, so there is no GPS location capacity So you can't get a geo-referencing point. And mobile network operators, as you might imagine, are not inclined in the vast majority of cases to be able to share what we call cell tower triangulation kind of data. So that is a separate issue that, as many of you know, can be used in law enforcement and things like that, but that is not a methodology that we employ. We depend on the respondent giving us an answer of where they are. And we can then screen in or screen out populations based on that location. Sometimes the question may not be so much, where do you live, but maybe how far do you live from an urban setting? So you may be interested in wanting to know whether they live in an urban, a peri-urban, or a rural setting. So various questions can be designed to determine those kinds of factors.
Great, thank you. Yes, and I believe our mobile application does have GPS.
That is correct. With mobile, that is correct. That adds a whole new element.
Yeah, so if you're willing to use something that only reaches smartphones, you can do the more specific sort of geofencing. Okay, we have some questions about IVR that maybe King or Scott, you could take. So when we're running IVR research, is it only the KeyPress based surveys, or do we have some where respondents can actually answer a question by speaking into the phone? And what do those response rates look like? And also, how do we vet IVR response data sets and maybe identify bad respondents or bad data within IVR? And that could be applied to probably all modes since we use similar quality checks across all. But yeah, Scott or King, would one of you want to take that?
King, can you take that initially?
Yeah, I'm sure. Happy to speak to that briefly. I think with the IVR capabilities, we are able to do voice capture in the devices as well too. So I know that, you know, for some of our work, we've not only used IVR as a way to implement work, but we've also used IVR as kind of a complementary product to some of our work to engage with users, whether that's through, you know, voice outreach or capture or whatever that might be. So that that functionality is available through IVR with regards to sample universe and how we weed out bad data. I think, you know, a lot of that really pertains to the same structure or process that we might use with a lot of our modes that are self-reported data collection. That's applicable to SMS and some of the other modes that we might do as well. A lot of that has to do with really reviewing the data set and monitoring participants' trends and responses over time. So I would say that we do look at quality issues on the basis of individual respondents being part of our larger pool of sample and engaging over time. We also look at the quality of responses in individual data sets, whether that be the pace of responses, straight lining through responses, high refusals to questions, and the like. Hopefully that answers some of those questions. Scott, I don't know if there's anything else.
That's about all I could add as well on IVR.
Great.
What we found, and I know there are several questions on IVR, and we do some IVR work, but we have found at GeoPoll that we are able to offer live call surveys in the same price range that IVR offers with a higher response rate. And the nice thing about live calls, and King knows this in his day-to-day life, is that you're interacting with an individual that has been trained and oriented on the purpose of the survey, can handle any questions of the respondent or offer clarifications within the parameters of that training. IVR does not offer that. It is truly a robotic relationship. And by doing the live calls, we have found in most of the countries we've worked in a strong ability to meet the needs using that live call approach to our client satisfaction.
Great. And then another question for King is, what is the maximum interview time that you can get on any of your modes? And maybe you can speak to which modes support those longer interviews, as well as that maximum time that we've seen.
Sure, happy to. I think, you know, there's a lot of variance in that depending on the, as I think Scott mentioned as well too, the survey content, the mode that we're presenting, the country that they're in. There's lots of, I think, you know, of course, cultural nuances that we've seen that have allowed some countries to allow or be more conducive to some of the longer content compared to some others. I would say that with our more self-reported modes, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, we usually try to stick to around 10 to 15 minutes at most to conduct those interviews, or else we do see, historically speaking, a bit more of a challenge with attrition of users over time, or attrition of, you know, responses and participation within individual surveys. And that's why a lot of our work, you know, focusing on, you know, face-to-face and what is currently, you know, caddy work in the company allows us to work beyond that. For caddy work, you know, I think we generally try to stick to 20 to 25 minutes per survey. We have gone above that in certain cases for more comprehensive CAPI questionnaires. But thinking about those two modes, I would say that we do find that we need to be more aware of the time involved to do CAPI work. There is still a limitation there, although most of the face-to-face work that we have worked on, we've found we've been able to, you know, manage through CAPI work within questionnaires that average, you know, 20 to 25 minutes, or potentially diversifying a project over two surveys and two engagements with an interviewer.
Great, thanks. And then Christine, if you could answer this question. Well, we have a couple of related questions about respondent privacy. So are the respondents anonymous? And does GeoPoll allow clients we work with to get the name or the contact details of the respondents? And also for research, do we undergo other processes, like, for example, certificates and permission letters? Or another common question is how we adhere to IRB standards for research.
Thank you, Roxy. So I think I'll start off with whether the respondents are anonymous. Yes, so at GeoPoll, we are able to work with two sets of databases. So there is our database, and there's also client database. So definitely with client database, you do know the contacts of the respondents who are within the database. However, for our database, yes, we do keep this anonymous, and this is because we are governed by different rules. One is with regards to even the relationship we have with our mobile network operators. There are rules that we need to adhere to, and that definitely includes confidentiality and not sharing contacts of our respondents with a third party. And also with regards to the research or the groups that we are in association with, for example, MSRA, there are guidelines that we need to follow through in terms of confidentiality. So we are not allowed to be able to share details such as their names. We're not allowed to share their telephone numbers or even where they live. So yes, the respondents are kept anonymous because of the confidentiality requirement that we are required to follow. So I think I've answered that one. What was the second one, Roxy?
I think the second question was on IRBs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll touch on the clearance certificate and permission letters. So we don't, and I think Scott will be able to chime in on this one as well. Eh? So we usually don't require clearance certificates or permission letters for all our surveys. However, there are some unique surveys where these are required. For example, there are some very sensitive surveys that we usually do need to go through bodies such as Ministry of Health for them to actually maybe review the instrument, review the procedures and the protocol that we are actually undertaking the survey through, then approve that, and then allow us to be able to administer the interview. So, and then of course, there are situations whereby if we are interviewing a minor, we therefore definitely need clearance and permission from their guardian before we actually undertake an interview with them. And of course, the interview has to be done in the presence of their guardian as well. So these are unique, there are unique situations and cases whereby we definitely need approvals and clearances at different levels, so based on the nature of the survey. Scott, I don't know if you can add in anything else there, or I've mentioned it all, and then maybe pick up on the next, the last question.
Yeah, quickly on IRBs, it is required for a number of surveys. And as Christine said, our clients will come to us and ask for our support with those. I've participated on several IRBs and discussing the methodologies, the modes, the sampling approaches, the question design, the data protection factors, and other things tied to the survey. And as you might imagine, some survey questions are more sensitive than others. But as Christine shared, it is very different from country to country. For instance, we're in Rwanda to conduct a survey. Often you need a survey visa and have it signed and stamped by a local authority. In other countries, the process is much less onerous. But the bottom line is that we abide by GDPR standards. These are the EU standards on data protection. And of course, every survey we conduct, we ask the question at the outset, asking for if the participant would be willing to opt in. If they say no, they are not, they are removed from that list. We don't contact them again. And so that prevents us from in any way giving the impression that we're spamming individuals. We also are very clear that the data is protected and the person's anonymity is protected throughout the entire process. Thank you.
Great. And then a last question that I think all of you could probably speak to, but maybe Kim can start, is how do we do quality checks of responses? So truth checks, especially for IVR and CADI. And do we have any issues with trusting responses? So maybe we can talk a bit about the systems we have in place with our quality dashboards and other ways we do quality checks for those modes.
Sure, Roxana, would you like me to speak to that?
Yep, why don't you go ahead?
Sure, happy to. So good question on that front. I think, again, you know, we do have a portfolio of different things that we try to implement in these different modes, but of course, some of them are applicable to some and not as much as others. The first thing that we do really have across all of our platforms in the way that we implement our work is the real-time data and dashboards, as my colleague mentioned, that allows us to really see quality data in real time, whether that's people collecting data on phones or SMS or IVR. Being able to see those results within a very short period of time allows us to take very fast corrective actions if issues are forthcoming in projects, whether those are, you know, a country-specific issue, a data quality issue, respondent issue. We also have, you know, their standardized protocol for face-to-face and CADI work with regards to callback verifications to call back and verify a portion of completed interviews. We also incorporate our standardized supervision protocol, which has to do with, you know, grading individual interviewers on their performance while conducting interviews and providing feedback to them. We also have, you know, audio recording, which we are also adding to our surveys. It allows us to listen into and really understand some of the interviews remotely, of course, and provide that as a quality control mechanism as well.
Great. Yeah, and then Scott, we have a couple of related questions to round it out, and then if you want to add to the quality checks, you could add as well, but do we have individual academic researchers among our clients? And also, how do we, or do we build solutions for student researchers as well?
Sure, I'd be glad. Maybe I can answer both questions in one form. We often will get contacted by academic researchers, some of them individual, some of them working within a larger academic institution. Looking to get data collection very quickly and efficiently. I know of a particular case just a number of months ago. It was a PhD student that was looking to collect data very quickly in South Africa, basically had a very limited budget. And we walked through the different ways, and specifically SMS was the particular model we used in that case, in order to reach out to some 300 people around the country asking a series of questions. And this survey was done very inexpensively, knowing that there are limited budgets that an individual researcher may have access to. But the vast majority of the data we are collecting are for organizations or institutions, whether they be academic or NGOs, where obviously greater resources available in order to get larger samples, more frequent engagement. But again, our model is quite flexible and can accommodate large scale as well as one-off, on-demand, unique niche needs that come into play. And then as far as build solutions for student researchers, I think it goes into the same approach. We can put together a very cost-effective data collection exercise if a particular client or student researcher is looking to collect it. But again, we have our basic cost structure that is very accommodating and has a large regard for value for money when we work with our donors and our clients. I see Olga also put another question up. Maybe I'll touch on it. And Christine, you and King, you can obviously touch on it as well. Mobile research is obviously an ongoing growing demand that we're seeing across the African continent. One thing to keep in mind always is that when we're conducting surveys by mobile, we are only getting a representative sample of those that have a basic or have access to a basic mobile device. We know there are populations that do not have access. And in those populations, that's where in-person interviews or CAPI, as my colleague King talked about, is the best way to collect that information. And the other thing to keep in mind is that in certain countries, and it really does vary from country to country, mobile has a tendency to be in the hands of young, male, urban people, if you look at it over, you know, in a very broad sense. So finding women that are older, that are living in rural areas, are much more difficult. Or from a country perspective, finding women who have access to phones in South Sudan is a completely different situation than women that have access to phones in Kenya. So we do look at those demographic characteristics when we have conversations with our clients, when they want to talk to particular populations, and we give them those kinds of notifications that there may be challenges depending on the particular demographic.
Okay, I think I can also add on to that. Scott, I don't know if you're done. I can also add on to that section.
Please, Christine, please.
Okay, great. So there are two elements. I'll quickly just add on to what King mentioned with regards to quality control. And what I wanted to highlight is that for us, we've put in measures across all the milestones with regards to quality control. And it all starts from the briefing stage. So even when we're doing the briefing, we usually check to ensure before any interviewer actually moves to undertaking the survey, they're actually undertaking it in the right way. So quality checks begin from that, where they also do dummy interviews even before actually doing dummy interviews, stock pilots, even before administering the real interview. And even the way King mentioned, during data collection, we have a lot of quality checks that we put in place with regards to supervision. We, if it's CATI, we do callbacks. If it's face-to-face, we do accompaniments as well. And also beyond data collection, when the data gets into our system, we also have a team that actually reviews that data to check out on whether there are any outliers, whether there are any discrepancies. And then that data is once more is removed from our database and the interviews are reviewed, are actually undertaken once more. So during that whole process and all the milestones, we have quality checks that are relevant to each of those. And then just to touch on the second bit where we're looking at challenges for mobile research. And I think maybe that's one area I hadn't mentioned earlier that was one of the frequently asked questions. Not all surveys, of course, in Africa and anywhere can fit within the remote mobile collection modes. And this will, what we usually do is one, we do an internal feasibility check even before we let a client know that we can actually be able to run that survey via mobile. So we look at incidence levels and we tell you, yes, we are actually able to hit the sample that you're looking at. And then of course, this will be the quote thereafter. So we usually first undertake a feasibility check to ascertain whether we are able to reach your required target respondent remotely via mobile. And then of course, some surveys that you cannot undertake via mobile. And this depends on the type of the respondents. I'll give an example. If you're doing expert interviews, there are some target consumers whom you cannot be able to do surveys remotely. For example, if we want to do surveys with doctors, that is a very difficult segment. There are very few, So definitely for such a survey, because of the target respondent, we usually have to administer some of those surveys through face-to-face, because we need to actually source for the respondent, we need to book interviews, and we need to administer the interview at their place and time of convenience. So beyond the type of respondent, again, there's the type of survey. Of course, not all surveys, again, can fit within mobile. I'll give an example. If a client wants to test a liquid, so it is a liquid or product test, and they don't want the consumer, it's very sensitive, it's very new within the innovation pipeline, so they don't want the product leaking out to the larger population. So what is required is we need to convene respondents to a central location test, known as a CLT, where we put them in a controlled environment, and we let them evaluate the liquid, test it, or look at the liquid, rate it, and we have the results then. So yes, there are surveys that we're able to do via mobile research, but there are surveys which really don't fit within that space because of the type of respondent we're talking about or the nature of the survey. And before we undertake any survey, as mentioned, we usually do an internal feasibility check and then advise the client appropriately on this type of survey would be best through the SMS mode, and we give reasons why. Or this survey, we cannot do it remotely. It needs to go into face-to-face, and we give reasons why. Thank you.
This is Scott. I'd like to also add an interesting dilemma that we've run into from time to time since the advent of COVID. We've had a number of clients come to us, and they had planned to do face-to-face surveys. They had designed the survey instrument, they were ready to go, and all of a sudden they couldn't travel, they couldn't deploy people because of risk. And they came to us saying, oh, we'd like to conduct this survey over the phone. Well, converting a 45-minute face-to-face survey that was intended to be in that kind of environment, at someone's home, into a phone interview is very difficult. And that gets to Christine's point about feasibility. So what we would do is take a look at the survey instrument that was drafted, or at least discuss the intention of the survey, and give feedback on how viable it might be using, say, a live call approach. And this may be altering the length of the survey, adjusting the questions and other factors. But the bottom line is that not all surveys fit every single mode. And that's one of the things that we're very careful about is having a very frank conversation with a potential client, expressing what the advantages, disadvantages, challenges, hurdles of each mode in each particular environment is, so that we can customize a response and a design and a solution that will be successful. Thank you.
Great, thanks so much. I think that is probably a good place to end. So I want to thank our speakers, Christine, Scott, and King. Thank you so much for all of your insights, and of course, everyone who joined and asked questions. We got a lot of great questions, and I hope we were able to answer them for you. If you have further questions for us, we have the emails of our panelists up here, and you can also go to our website, geopoll.com. We have a lot of content on mobile research best practices in our blog and various guides as well. So thank you, everyone, and hope you have a good rest of your day.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed the session and most importantly, learned some new things. For more details, visit our website at www.geopoll.com. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode of Geopoll Talks. Bye-bye.